Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to our Masters coverage, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. As always, thank you so much for joining us on this Friday night. It's a big weekend. Masters 2018 is underway at the ultra-exclusive Augusta National Golf Club in Georgia. And there are so many exciting storylines that was leading into this tournament and already developing. So it's a bit difficult to narrow it all down. How will Tiger perform in his first major since 2015? Of course, the field started with 87 guys in. And can Dustin Johnson, his eighth appearance in the Masters, can he make up for last year's slip and fall? We've got a lot to get into. Delighted to welcome back as we go inside the ropes with former PGA pro and author. That is Mr. Larry Miller, who is always here to help provide some answers. And we hear from so many of our listeners. They love having you on the show. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, great to be back and again this week. And, we've waited all winter for this. What a great week this is.
Incredible anticipation. So let's get right to it. How much pressure is there in this type of a major championship, because winning is everything?
Well, it's unlike any other in regard to the pressure, because it's such a coveted title, and it means so much going forward. You're back for the rest of your life, as long as you can swing the club and want to play. You know, the Champions Dinner is an event in itself that you're privy to every year. I mean, it just means so many things, not to mention the exemptions you get, the world ranking. You know, there's just so many factors involved that the pressure's ratcheted up this week. And everybody wants that green jacket. And, it seems like it always comes down to the cream of the crop this week. And you'll get early leaders, unknowns that burst out of the gate under par. And then they disappear by Saturday and Sunday, if not Friday. And so and then you see the stars start, rising to the top and cluttering up the leaderboard. So, it's really an exciting tournament. This particular tournament, I think, is maybe the most exciting in many, many years, because not only do you have Tiger's return, but you've got so many of the world's best players hitting on all cylinders right now and playing well. And so it shapes up as just a fantastic stretch run come the weekend.
Hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our 2018 Masters conversation with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. The 82nd Masters. Our preview and conversation continues with Larry Miller as we are inside the ropes. There are so many things to look forward to. I have to wonder, how much do you look forward to the par three contest? And you talk about some of the older guys, if you can still swing a club, Tom Watson wins the par three contest. I thought that was just magnificent.
Well, those holes are anywhere from 70 yards to 130 or so. And so even, you can be 80 years old, you can still swing a wedge. I'll tell you, one year I was watching the par three tournament, Sam Snead was in his 80s. And he could hardly tee the ball up. It took him 2 minutes to get it teed up with a 9-iron shot to about a 120-yard hole.
Wow.
And he finally got it on the tee. But guess what? By the time he got it on the tee and took his stance, that same old swing came through, and he hit it about 20 feet from the hole.
Oh. Hey, our Masters coverage continues. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, our familiar guest. That is Larry Miller, as we are inside the ropes each and every week. PGA pro, author of his book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. And I know, Larry, you've been to the Masters many, many times. What do you look forward to the most with this particular tournament and major?
I like to get out. You know, I like to watch 13 and 15, those par fives where, you know, you have the hazard in front where, you know, the ball's a little bit shorter, it rolls back into the hazard. And then if you're a little long, you got, you know, you're back over the green with a downhill, really tough shot facing the water again. I mean, those two holes to me are really exciting holes. 16, of course, is a lot of fun. You know, as you know, I mean, if you remember Tiger's, you know, chip that hung on the lip for a second. With the Nike logo,
yes,
and then fell in. I mean, so, you know, 13, 15, 16, those are my favorite holes, and I look forward to watching those holes. And then, of course, the most exciting thing is the back nine on Sunday. That's when, you know, it's like the Kentucky Derby when they turn for home, and nothing more thrilling than that. And so this one should be a really good one.
Hey, you know, what is the strategy? What should the mindset be of these players? I mean, here we are, you know, day two in the books, but what is the mindset, you know, going into a tournament of this caliber and the strategy, Larry?
Well, you know, the mindset is to try to start off with a consistent, solid start. You know, you don't have to get fancy or crazy. You can't get upset if you get over par early. You want to try to be steady that first round and just keep yourself in the game. Tiger used to say many times that you can't win a tournament on the first day, but you could sure lose it. And and so you want to keep yourself in the mix and try to be consistent. Now, as far as strategy, I'll tell you, that golf course is unlike any other course. I've played the course. I didn't play in the Masters. My best finish ever was tied for third, and you had to be a tournament winner to get in. But I did play the course in 1978, and even though it's a lot longer now, the green complexes were pretty much the same. And let me tell you the strategy there. You have to really think about your approach shots, and you know, you have to know where that pin location is, and you have to be able to place your pro shots in the proper place. Because, you know, it's one thing to be able to putt from a good spot, but if you miss a green, you better miss it to the best side you can miss it on with regard to the pin position, because pitching and chipping to those greens is what is really difficult. And that's what's unlike any other place, is that the chips and pitches to those greens are just diabolical. And if you get on the wrong side of the hole, it's almost impossible to get it up and down unless you drain a long twisting putt. So you got to give great thought to your approach shots and where you're going to place those. And if you miss the shot, where you're going to miss it, you know, what side. So that comes into play a great deal. And that's why experience there is so important.
You know, I've been to the Masters in 2007 and, of course, in 2016. My husband's been four times. Stephen, who is now 16, he has actually had the opportunity to go three times. And, you know, Larry, walking the course, it seems like it's a ball striker's course. Does that give those guys that got that extra juice that they can pipe that drive, does that give them the advantage and they need to take advantage of it from the start?
Well, the great ball strikers with the irons are the guys that have the advantage and a good short game. The driving at Augusta is by tour standards, you know, relatively very easy. There's a lot of space on almost every hole. With a couple of exceptions, but for the most part, you can miss the driver, you know, 20, 30 yards and still have a shot to the green. So the big thing is hitting it long. You know, they've made it so long there, and it was a little chilly this morning to start on Thursday morning, but and today too. But the big thing there is being able to hit it long. You're not going to see a short hitter, you know, do well there these days with the way they've lengthened the course. You've got room to miss the driver, but you have to hit it very long. The big thing is for the shot makers is the irons, the approach. A guy who's really on his iron game is going to be in the mix. I like a guy like Stenson, Ulrich Stenson, who is playing well this year. And when he gets those irons going, he sticks them in there 15, 20 feet time after time. And I like his chances, although my pick is Tiger for the week. I think that he knows the course so well, he's so confident and comfortable there, that I think he's going to be a real force come the weekend.
You know, of course, last weekend here in Houston, we had an opportunity to check out to attend Saturday's Houston Open. And, of course, Ian Poulter, the 87th man to qualify for this year's Masters, finds his way back. He's had 13 Masters appearances. You know, what were your expectations from him? And I wanted to talk to you about tonight on the program. You know, what are some of the best, the European players' chances? I mean, who comes to your mind? You were just talking about Stenson.
Well, Stenson comes to mind. Hideki Matsuyama.
Oh, yeah.
Is another one that I think Tommy Fleetwood. Mm-hmm. He's had some great finishes lately, and he's known as a tremendous ball striker with the irons. Those are some of the names I think. Lee Westwood has always underperformed, in the majors and at Augusta, and it's very odd because he is a great ball striker. I think the short game, around the greens and on the greens, has been his downfall. But I like, as I said, I like Stenson's chances. Matsuyama could be in there. Fleetwood could be there. Sergio, of course, is playing well. As I said, so many really great players are playing so well right now that it's like just throw a dart at the board. And any of those top guys in the top 20 in the world, 15 or 20 in the world, has a great chance to win it. So that's what makes it so exciting, is that it's going to be a mystery come the weekend, who's going to end up on top. It's going to be fun to watch.
Absolutely. Watching so much of the coverage this week on the Golf Channel, it was interesting listening to Jim Bones McKay as one of the commentators talking about that the Masters, it really is a bomber's paradise. The players with the distance can dial and kick it up a notch, as we were just talking about. But I want you to fill in the blank for me here, Larry. The Masters is a tournament that requires players to be what? What comes to my mind is you've got to be patient, right?
You just took the word right out of my mouth.
Okay.
It shows you that great minds think alike.
Oh, well, thank you.
But no, patience there. You have to be patient because there's a stretch of holes there from 4, 5, 6 that are very difficult. So it's very easy to end up, even 1 over, 2 over after 6, 7 holes. So you have to be patient, knowing that you've got those 5 pars coming up. You've got 8, 13, and 15. So you've got 3 par 5s in the last 11 holes, and they're all reachable. So even if you get 1 or 2 over, you can't panic. You have to stay patient and realize that you've got a lot of birdie opportunities coming up. But that's easier said than done. You get a couple of 3 over par, boy, panic sets in, and you want to catch up right away. Then you make another mistake because you're rushing. And it can snowball. So patience, yep, you're right. You picked the right word. It's the most important quality, I think, at a tournament like the Masters.
Okay, so Larry, what I hear you saying is you're talking about being patient with your pre-shot routine. What are you saying to yourself as you're walking down the fairway, going shot to shot, so that you stay, in that zone you're talking about as being patient? What do you mean?
Yep, you have to breathe. You have to keep breathing evenly.
Okay.
And that's an important little discussed aspect of top-notch golf, mm-hmm. tour golf, is the way you breathe. You start breathing a little faster, and then your muscles get faster, and your swing gets faster, and you start making mistakes. So it's important to just keep breathing evenly, deeply. It's nice long exhales. When they train the snipers in the military, mm-hmm. they teach them right before you pull the trigger to exhale, a very long, long exhale. And what that does, it brings the pulse rate right down to just very, very low. And at that point, that's when you pull that trigger, because that's when you're most still and most calm. Same thing with golf. You exhale right before the swing or the putt, and you got a better chance of staying even keeled and not get too excited.
Hour number 2 at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our 2018 Masters conversation with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back to Hour Number 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. The 82nd Masters. Our preview and conversation continues with Larry Miller as we are inside the ropes. One of the things that, as a carryover, working with my sons, when I am out there with them, I really like them, encourage them to have that deep cleansing breath right before, especially on that opening hole, because it seems like that's where you're really juiced, you're really amped up, and you're trying to get, their emotions under control for that opening tee shot.
Yep. That's right. You want to get that pulse rate to be down when you start off the round and keep it down. And it's easy to forget. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get ahead of yourself and think of something else. Next thing you know, anxiety sets in. So you have to keep, it's the old cliche from the sports psychologist to stay in the present. But it's true. You have to do that. I mean, it sounds, like I say, cliche-ish, but But you've got to find a way to realize that each shot is an entity in itself. A 320-yard drive is worth the same as a one-inch tap-in. And so you have to just play each shot as if it's, as I've said many times, as if it's a tournament in itself. And you prepare for that one shot, and you execute it and focus on it, and then you move to the next one. If you get ahead of yourself, that's when things, you know, start going crazy.
Hey, we are Inside the Ropes, PGA Pro author. That is Larry Miller with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You know what? We're going to keep him a little bit long because this is a compelling conversation. I always love having Larry on the program, but it is a very special week. 2018 Masters, Augusta National. We're breaking it all down. And, you know, when we think about the Augusta National, it's something that you never can fully conquer. You've got to understand all the idiosyncrasies, the nuances of this course. And Larry, there's so much information. You've played it. How do you, you hear this many times coaches talk about this, you got to keep it simple because you don't want to get overloaded in your mind, and then it will take you out of your game ultimately.
Yeah, you have to focus on positive locations, I call it, where, you know, you get on the tee box, mm-hmm. and you look down the fairway and you try to choose a positive location for that shot, and you really burn it into your mind. You focus on it. That's the only thing you're considering. And, you know, the last thing you do before you pull the trigger is you take one last look at that positive location, same with your approach shot, and on and on. It's, you know, the greens at Augusta are probably the most difficult that they play all year. They're not only large, but they're severely undulating and extremely fast. And so that's why you see a lot of first-time players, and you see these amateurs, you know, that get into the tournament in various ways. And you know, you'll see 80, 82, 83, you know, right out of the box because they've never encountered anything like these greens. And let me tell you, the practice rounds don't do it justice because in the practice rounds, they've got the pin locations in pretty easy, accessible places, at least for Augusta. And then when the tournament starts, they get these really tough pin positions. And so you haven't putted or chipped into those locations. And so that's why, as I said before, experience comes into play so much because it's the greens. It's not mm-hmm. it's not off the tee so much, but it's on the greens. And if you don't really know those greens, you're in trouble.
Hey, it is the 87th Masters, and we are providing full coverage tonight, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We always love hearing from you. Join us live at Twitter, at eradiosports. You can email the show at info@eradiosports.com and podcastarena.com. Okay, Larry, you are a pro, and I got to ask you this. If you are, we've got this new generation, these young, fresh players. If you're a newer player, and you're going into a practice round, wouldn't you, what kind of advice would you provide for them? Or what kind of advice and guidance would you give them in terms of, would you watch some of those experienced players and how they're practicing around the greens and what you can learn from watching them?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you want to, if you got a, I used to do this when I was on the tour. If you get a late tee time, mm-hmm. I'd get out there early and watch some of the top players. Or if I had a really early time, when I finished, I'd follow some of the top players. Uh-huh. I wanted to see how they would attack a golf course and how they would go about their business because they're successful and there's a reason for it, and I wanted to find out why. And so that's why a lot of times you'll see at the Masters, you'll see some of these amateurs try to arrange a practice round with an experienced player. And failing that, at least get some local caddies who know the course to go around with you and point out all the nuances of the course, of which there are many, many, many at Augusta National. And so it's there are ways to do it. You know, try to get there as many times as you can and play enough practice rounds, especially around the greens. As I said, driving is easy there, relatively. But you want to throw down 8 or 10 balls around those greens all mm-hmm. over the place and hit all sorts of chips and pitches to them, because I'm telling you, it's getting it up and down there, you know, is a nightmare if you're in the wrong spot. And so you have to know the layout of the greens. You know, you make a chart when you play a practice round. You try to make a chart of the greens, and you split it into four quadrants. And you know, the pin's always going to be in one of those four quadrants. And so you chart it that way and see where the breaks are And that will tell you that, depending on the pin position, where you have to try to place your approach shot.
Well, this is such a highly anticipated Masters leading into this. Where do you think, Larry, the Masters is won and lost? I mean, you've kind of talked a little bit about it, but perhaps someone is just, you know, tuning us in tonight. Where is the Masters won and lost? I mean, earlier we were talking about ball striking and the guys that are the big hitters. They can capitalize on the par fives and view them as par fours, but what do you think?
Well, the par fives yield so many birdies on that course because almost everybody in the field can reach every one of them in two. The par threes, you know, are they're what they are. I mean, you're going to probably play those in even par, you know, one over at the worst. The key is the par fours. You have to play the par fours well at Augusta to contend. If you can get around in a few under par on the par fours, and you're going to make a lot of birdies on the fives. So you're going to offset any mistakes you make. But if you don't play the par, and the par fours can be really difficult. You've got holes like, you know, 10, 11. It's just on and on. Difficult holes, five, that number one is very difficult. But if you can just be patient and try to be conservative on those holes, don't try to go for too many pins, and just try to make pars on those par fours, you're probably going to score very well. I think that's the key, is how you play the par fours.
How much has the course changed over the last 10 to 20 years? You said you played it in, what, did you say 78?
78, yeah. Oh, it's so much longer, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
You know, yesterday in one of the telecasts, they were talking about Nick Faldo when he won, and he hit a second shot into a par five with a four-wood from 208 yards.
Wow.
Today, they're hitting 6 and 7 iron from 208 yards. So, you know, Nick Faldo won the Masters hitting a four-wood that far.
Uh-huh.
Now they're hitting 6 and 7 iron. And they've lengthened the course. When I played it, it was around 6,800, maybe a little more, 6,850 maybe. It's almost 7,600 yards. And, you know, If you're not a long hitter, forget it. You know, don't even show up. It's crazy. And so that's the difference, I think, is the way they've lengthened it. The green complexes are pretty much the same. Very little changes there. The fairways have always been wide. There's a lot of room. Those pine trees are not especially close together. And so even if you're in the trees, you can still usually maneuver, you know, one way or the other around those pine trees because they're not that dense. Unless you get way off into the woods, but that doesn't happen often with those players. It's basically the greens. It's as I said, you know, we keep talking about that, but that's where the difference is.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we're wrapping up our time. Larry Miller, Inside the Ropes, PGA Pro, author of his book Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Stephen and I the other night we were just going through, you know, on YouTube and just looking at swings. I mean, it was pretty fine watching Mr. Hogan.
Yep. He was a tactician and a mechanic on the golf course, and you know, he just picked it apart. And he had the ability to control the golf ball so well, so specifically that he could, you know, we talked about the four quadrants on the greens. Hogan could place the ball in one of those quadrants with a five iron if he wanted to.
Oh my gosh!
And so that's why he was so good, was because he could control the ball like nobody else ever has.
Well, what about Bubba Watson, his ability to control the ball? Take us back to, you know, when he won the Masters. I mean, I know he's engaged, he's happy right now in terms of, you know, just his attitude, life is good, family life is good. It seems like this course embraced his creativity.
You know, yeah, and Bubba Watson's the antithesis of Ben Hogan. You know, Ben Hogan hit the ball straight as anybody that ever lived.
Uh-huh.
And Bubba Watson, he can't hit a straight shot.
Right.
You know? But he doesn't have to because he can bend it left to right and get to any flag. And it's almost ironic that he cannot hit a straight shot, but yet he can get to any flag. And Hogan could get to any flag because he could hit a straight shot. And so it's pretty interesting. But the difference is that Bubba Watson he's got a good short game too, great touch around the green.
Yes.
But you just cannot hide a pin from him because if it's in the back right corner, he'll just start it way left and just hook it back in there to the flag. And he has no fear either. And And so it's interesting to watch. And he's got a great chance, too, because he's playing well, and he's won there twice. And so anyway, I just can't wait for the weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Absolutely. It's a special weekend, always a special segment, and we have gone overtime. And why not? Because it is Larry Miller, Inside the Robes, PGA Pro, author, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Always a true honor. We love you, Larry, and just have a wonderful weekend. Also, I want to give a shout-out. I have started a brand-new blog, the GolfMom.com blog. You got to check it out. Larry, I want some feedback. We'll talk about it next week, okay?
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, it is Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we get underway with our next segment, here in Hour 2, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and they are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. As promised before commercial break, it is now time to turn our attention back to some college hoops. We've been talking a lot about the Masters tonight. We are going to do a full recap, a full court press on the Men's Final Four. It truly was, we think about, you know, we've had a chance to kind of digest and exhale from the 2017-2018 season. Really just complete insanity. I had a busted up bracket, and it was ultimately in 2018 that the Villanova Wildcats win the NCAA championship, and that is their second title in 3 years. And I have to share, you know, last weekend on my program, we had a lot of guests that thought Kansas would win it all. And we're delighted to have back with us. He is a proud Jayhawk. That is the sports writer, contributor, also a author from theathletic.com, a dear friend of our show. And that is Mr. Ken Davis. Good evening, Ken.
Hello, Biggie. How you doing?
Come on, Ken. We're trying to bring some smile your way. I know you were in San Antonio last weekend. You were there for all of the action. And as I just slated, you know, you are a huge Jayhawk fan. So what happened in the semifinals? I truly thought this would be a very close game, and it ended up being a blowout.
Everybody I knew thought it would be a close game. We were anticipating a great game like the Kansas-Duke game, which I think was the top game of the tournament. It was so exciting in overtime. And it was all Villanova. I mean, you cannot win a game when the other team is making three-pointers the way they did. And it was lopsided from the very beginning. I think that's the most disappointing thing. When you get to the Final Four, anything can happen and any team can win or lose. But the fact that it wasn't a game after the first minute just kind of blew everybody's mind. I'm sure that was really great for Villanova, and it was a tremendous performance. I mean, hitting 18 of 43 pointers. KU over the season had been a very good three-point shooting team, and they didn't make one till the second half. So, if I'm correct on that, no, I'm not. I'm looking at the box score now. They had two in the first half, but they only made seven total. It was a one-sided game, and Villanova deserves to win. Villanova deserved the whole thing. They were the best team. They won by large margins every game in the tournament. And Jay Wright has built a tremendous program, and I have absolutely nothing against Jay. He's a great guy. He's a great coach. Jalen Brunson's one of my favorite players in college basketball this past year. I'm sure that he'll move on to the NBA. And then you have a guy like Dante, the big ragu, coming in at the end of the. It was just amazing. I've seen him play. He played very well against UConn when Villanova played here. You just don't expect a guy to hit 10 or 15 shots and 5 or 7 from three-point land. He was amazing. So give the credit where the credit's due. Villanova has built a program, and they've been getting back to the Final Four, and they've won two of the last three. And there's due, you know, you have to give the correct due. So it was all Villanova.
Right, right.
KU didn't play a good game. Michigan didn't play a very good game. but it's all about Villanova.
Hey, the contributor to TheAthletic.com and sports writer, that is Ken Davis with us tonight, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show here in hour number two. We'd love to hear from you. We are always live at Twitter. You can join us at E-Radio Sports. Email the show at info@eradiosports.com. And if you want to go back and listen to our interview with Ken Davis, that is podcast.arena.com. Well, Ken, you nailed it. I mean, talking about Villanova, they broke the Final Four record for three-pointers made with 18, as you said. Certainly a very impressive offensive performance. You like it, you know, if you're a Wildcat fan, that they got off to such a fast start and they were able to set the tempo and the tone for that game. But when we think about Kansas, we think about the Jayhawks. Ken, what could they have done differently to have slowed them down right from the start?
Well, I suppose they could have done a little bit more changing on defense. I think Bill went to a zone and it slowed it down a little bit, and then they got the scoring. But it, when you look up and see the, what you know, it was 24-6 or whatever it was, boy, that's you know, very disappointing, very discouraging for a team to try to get back in the game. And just the style of play by Villanova, I mean, they were hitting those in the first half, and I said, well, they won't make that many in the second half. Well, yeah, they only made five instead of, they were just on fire. They know what they're doing. It's hard to defend a team with that great ball movement. I think I talked to Svi Mykhailiuk after the game, and I said, were their shots contested? And he said, yeah, he goes, sometimes, not so much most of the time, because they didn't get back their defensive positions and their defensive sets were kind of destroyed by all that ball movement. And they whip it around and they get the ball in the hands of the guy who has the best shot. He takes it, he makes it. And it's that simple. You know, that's basketball. Mm-hmm. And it was beautifully done. It was beautifully executed. I don't know that there was a whole lot that Kansas could do after that point. I think, that there was a little bit of a surge there by Devontae Graham, and I hate to see him going out like that. I mean, my two favorite players in basketball this year were Devontae Graham and Jalen Brunson.
Yes.
And honestly, Jalen didn't play that great in the championship game because Dante took over. But two good kids. We need more people like this in college basketball who aren't braggadocious. They do it for their team. They do it for their school. And I love both of them. So, Jalen, the spoils go to the victor. So,
yeah, it's refreshing.
It's really hard. I was in Dallas for the first rounds. I stayed home for the regionals and then went to the Final Four. And I ended up being in a lot of losing locker rooms. And it's just the toughest place ever, and you know what that's like, no matter if it's golf or basketball or baseball or football. It's and especially with kids, and I mean they're still basically kids, and they have high emotions for their teammates, they have high emotions for their school, and they wouldn't be where they are in the tournament if they didn't. So it's tough to see it come to such a sudden end.
Absolutely. Hey, Ken Davis is an award-winning sports writer and author of three books on college basketball. His most recent release from a few years ago, 100 Things Kansas Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, was published by Triumph Books in November of 2013. And, you know, as we talk about Villanova, I mean, we knew that they led the nation in scoring. They averaged 86 points per game. But did you think they were capable, Ken, of generating this kind of offensive production so quickly, so fast? I mean, they got off to a fast start. And ultimately, you know, that translates into confidence. And you've got that swagger, and you got to be feeling pretty good about yourself when you can light it up like that. And you have the confidence and the belief stepping into those shots that, you know, it's going to be money in the bank.
Well, about halfway through the second half, I was just wondering whether they were going to hit 100 points.
Yeah,
they were heading
yeah.
that direction. Backed off at all, it just settled into where it was. But 95 is close. They have their system, and it's based on guards, and you don't really need a huge big man in there to make a big difference. Forward, guard, whatever you want to call them, they're all great perimeter players, and they can hit the three, and that's why they made 18. So
right.
It's a good system, and Jay has perfected it. And So yeah, they're explosive. When they came here to Connecticut where I live and played UConn earlier in the year, and they didn't have much of a first half, and then they just turned it on in the second. And DiVincenzo was one of those that lit that up that time too. So it's they don't care who gets the points; they just want to win. And Jay has become one of the elite by moving into this class. And you know, I was there 17 years ago and covering the Big East when he came into the league, and everybody knew about his past success, and we wondered how good he would be, and he turned out to be good, and now he's in the category of great because he's done so much at the Final Four level and throughout the NCAA tournament, and the Big East has to be thankful to the guy for, since the split up, he's the guy who's kept the Big East in the main spotlight. So there's no way you can be upset with Villanova.
Right.
They're a very good representative of college basketball.
Well, and offensively, you know, we think about Villanova, but the fact defensively, I mean, the Wildcats held the Jayhawks to 33% three-point shooting, and that's a season low. That certainly was disappointing. Let's move ahead, Ken. Let's talk about how, you know, the season, it has ultimately played out for the Jayhawks, but I know one of your recent blogs, now Kansas must start the process of focusing on their future. What did you share, and what is the focus of their future moving forward?
Well, I mean, a lot of people are picking them in the early top 25. They're picking KU number one. And you never know how that's going to work out, but they're going to have a good team again, despite losing Devontae and now, help me out. my brain is fried. The people that they're going to lose are going to be hard to replace. Devontae, Swee are gone. And they've recruited very, very well. And they've got the Lawson brothers coming in from Memphis, which will be the biggest thing. They sat out this year as transfers.
Nice.
And that is going to put together a very good team. Now, you don't know how's the chemistry going to be. You don't know all those things. But it looks like they would be in the same mix, basically. Villanova, Duke, Michigan. They're all going to be in that mix for the top four, top five. And so, I don't know how much that annoys college basketball fans, it's the same group. But I think they have a chance to get back to the Final Four and maybe win it next year. But, you know, that's safe to say at this point, and you just have to kind of wait. But, they have nothing to hang their heads about this year. No one expected them to reach this and to win the 14th straight, break the record, Big 12 championships, then to go on and win the BA championship in the tournament. They had a great year. And, they had some really, really bad games. Mm-hmm. No one's going to deny that. They lost more at home than they ever had. But Bill's at the point where he's put together a program just as well as Jay, and keeps it alive with the recruiting, and they're going to be a good team next year.
A full recap on the men's national championship. We're going one-on-one with Ken Davis, contributor to TheAthletic.com. We got to step aside. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is hard to believe the men's Final Four, the national championship, all that now is in the rearview mirror. We're getting the thoughts of Ken Davis, contributor to TheAthletic.com. Hey, could you see Bill Self? We've talked a little bit about this tonight. Could you see Bill Self taking his game to the next level, and perhaps his next destination would be the NBA? Is he a coach that, you know, because there's been a lot of talk about Jay Wright. What about Bill Self?
I don't see it. I really don't. I think he's very happy at the college level. He's very happy at Kansas. He's very well paid. He's come to love the Lawrence area, and I suppose anything can happen at any time. But somebody wrote to me early on the fieldhouse.com site that if he, well, it wasn't written to me, it was written in general. If Self doesn't well do well in the tournament this year, will he be fired? Ain't never going to be fired.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. There's nothing he can do to get fired there. And that is, I found the question to be totally absurd. But I think inside himself, I mean, I've done a lot of profiles on him because he went into the Hall of Fame this year. I've met most of his family, his wife. I just think they're very content in Lawrence, Kansas, doing what he's doing. And the people of Kansas, even though they loved Roy Williams and hated it when Roy Williams left, they've come to adopt Bill as the guy. You know, he's the face of Kansas basketball now, and they don't want that to change. And I don't really think he wants that to change. I don't know that the NBA suits him for his style. But I don't know that much about the NBA, to tell you the truth. But I watch it occasionally, you know. And who I was trying to get out of my mouth was Malik Newman, who announced yesterday that he's going pro. And that was no surprise. He told us after the game he would have a decision by next week. Well, he had it by Tuesday, or Wednesday, I guess. I don't even know what day it is anymore. Between travel and spending so much time in the state of Texas.
Well, you're just in recovery mode. I know you're very disappointed about the Jayhawks coming up short at the men's Final Four. We have been going one-on-one with Ken Davis, the contributor with TheAthletic.com. Check him out, sports writer with TheAthletic.com. My final point I got to talk to you about tonight is, how about one of the biggest upsets that we saw in March Madness in college basketball, perhaps, was on the women's side. And I think, in my mind, this has got to be one of the best Final Fours ever. We saw so many buzzer beaters. We saw two of them in overtime, but so many great plays, and then Notre Dame comes out on top. I mean, it truly was. Ken, I've got about 40 seconds. I mean, it was epic. Come on, you got to weigh in on this, too.
The semifinals, I got to watch both games, and those were incredible games. I was out to dinner Sunday night and missed the championship game, but everything I saw was highlights and everything. Wow. I mean, Notre Dame just blew everybody away. It was more exciting than the men's, and I don't know if I've ever said that.
Oh, it was incredible, yeah. Hey, Ken Davis, been with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, a dear friend of our program. Ken, we look forward to another conversation. Enjoy the off season, and I promise we will talk again real soon. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Take care.
Absolutely. That, of course, was Ken Davis, sports writer. Tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. A very nice recap of the men's Final Four. And a very special thank you to all of our amazing guests and lineup. It's an exciting weekend. The Masters 2018. It is underway, the 82nd Masters. And, of course, we are looking so forward to the close of the NBA regular season, as the playoffs will be starting on Saturday, April 14th. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, encouraging you not to drink and drive.